I think I can say with a fair amount of confidence that I'm not alone in liking to know how things work. I say with confidence because many TV channels are full of programmes about how things work or how they're designed or made. And if you've ever tried getting a place on a tour of a factory or power station or theatre or indeed any kind of behind-the-scenes visit, you will know that they get booked up pretty quickly. Obviously, a lot of us like to know. We're curious, fascinated, intrigued and sometimes amazed at what we see and learn, and quite rightly so. I've been on numerous such visits and loved every one of them, and I've spent many a happy hour watching TV programmes like How It's Made, Kirsty's Handmade Home, Grand Designs, Abandoned Engineering, and even Wheeler Dealers, where each episode, Ed China, a mechanic, skillfully restores some clapped-out old vehicle to its former glory. There are some very clever people around. That said, although we might like or want to know, much of the time we don't actually need to know how something works in order to use it, appreciate it or benefit from it. For instance, I can drive a car, and although I have a rough idea how it works, I don't know in detail, and I certainly couldn't explain it or mend it if it broke down. Likewise, the computer I'm using to write this sermon, I can operate it without knowing much about how it works, nor do I really understand how the internet works in order for it to reach you. Interesting as it all is, I don't actually need to know. Maybe it's quite a leap, maybe not, to say that I have a similar approach to what I encounter in the Bible. I like to know and understand and be able to see an explanation or reason in the stories. But that isn't always possible, because some things are beyond the ability of even the cleverest of us to understand or explain. So that certainly rules me out. And I'm okay with that. I'm certainly not advocating that we don't question what we are presented with. That would be foolhardy, and has in the past been very damaging and disastrous, when faith has been placed in individuals who are either deluded about their own greatness or have ulterior motives. Nor should we willfully ignore evidence that doesn't fit in with what we want to believe. But I accept that there are some things we just can't explain or know. That doesn't mean that they aren't true or didn't happen, or that we can't benefit and be enriched by them. People who are sceptical or hostile about religious faith want evidence, which believers can't provide. If we could, it wouldn't be called faith. And the sceptics can't prove that our faith is wrong or misplaced. The most obvious example of something we all know to be real but can't be proved with empirical evidence is love. Love can take many forms, and expressions of love can be of an even greater variety, but no matter how extravagant they might be, they're not proof. In matters of love, there is also a lot of trust involved, and a willingness to make ourselves vulnerable. We can't know for certain whether the love professed for us is real, however much we might want to. Our reading from Matthew's Gospel tells the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000, one of the best known of the miracles he performed, and it's a story known to more than just churchgoers and believers. Many of us choose to believe it, but we can't prove it happened or know how Jesus did it. But do we really need to know in order to benefit or be enriched by it? I personally don't think so, because there is a lot more beside the miracle itself to be enriched by. To set the story in context, Jesus has been rejected by the people of his hometown, Nazareth. In spite of hearing his teaching in their synagogues and being amazed by his deeds, they can't get past the knowledge that he was the carpenter's son. They know his mother is Mary, and they know his brothers and sisters, so they effectively devalued him. So he moved on realising that he couldn't get through to them. He then received devastating news that John, who baptised him, had been executed. Murdered because he had upset Herodias by criticising King Herod's relationship with her. Understandably, Jesus wanted some time to himself, to take in and start to come to terms with what had happened, and no doubt to grieve for John. He may also have been frightened, but that's something else we can't know. When Jesus got into a boat to go off somewhere by himself, sadly the time alone he wanted was not to be, because the crowds followed him. But instead of insisting on his own need for privacy and space, we are told that when he saw them, he had compassion for them. He went to them and cured their sick. He taught them. As evening drew near, the disciples, quite sensibly, suggested that Jesus send the people into the nearby towns so that they could get some food. They too were probably thinking of the people's welfare and concerned for Jesus himself. Imagine their feelings when he said, "You give them something to eat." "What? How are we supposed to do that? We've only got 5 small loaves and 2 fish. No doubt their stress levels were immediately rocketing. But then came the miracle when Jesus blessed the food and gave it to the disciples to share among the crowd. It would have been impressive if he had fed 20 people with such a modest amount of food, but we are told that 5,000 men plus women and children, so probably 7,000 to 10,000 people, ate and were filled. And there were 12 baskets of leftovers. We can't know how Jesus did this. Does that detract from the story? Not for me. For those who demand hard, irrefutable evidence before they will believe anything, all I can think is that our history books would be a lot thinner than they are, and life in general would be a lot meaner and poorer than it is. For me, what stands out in the story is Jesus' loving care and compassion for others, something each of us can do our best to emulate, thereby enriching life for us all. We do know how to do this.